Well, hello, listener. Welcome to the Zeitgeist Tapes, a monthly kind of inspection of the interrelationship between popular culture and politics. And this month, we decided that's Emma Burnell, my co-presenter. Please say hello, Emma.
Hello.
Our listener always appreciates that. this month, we decided we'd talk about Vice, the new movie that's out and garnering awards, a biopic about Dick Cheney. And in order to help us with this, Alex von Tunzelmann, who wants to be described as an author and historian, and that she's an author because she's written actual books about history, like America's role in the Caribbean during the Cold War and the Suez Crisis, but also has written about how films about the past and how accurate they are in a series for The Guardian, Real History, which was turned into a book, very good book, and has also wrote the script for the film Churchill that was released in 2017, which is the better of the two films about Churchill that were released in that year.
There are only two films about Churchill? Oh, in that year.
And starred Brian Cox, who, of course, should have won the Academy Award for playing Churchill rather than that other guy, whatever his name was. So today we are three, but Alex, just say hello to our listener.
Hello, listener.
I'm sure they're very grateful for that. So we're gonna sort of chew around the debate about Vice, because there's been all kinds of things going on about in terms of the reviews of the film and about its politics, about how far it really does represent that past and whether you can really should dramatise the past in a kind of freewheeling way, which some people have accused Vice of doing. So I just thought, you know, Alex, you got into a, I don't know if it was a debate, but you wrote in The Guardian about in response to another Guardian columnist who didn't like the fact that Vice distorted the past and was kind of banging on about how bad that is. And it's kind of like, in the era of fake news, we should have accurate rather than deliberately inaccurate representations of the past. And you kind of weighed in on that. So I just wondered, what's your general take on Vice in terms of a representation of that particular past, the life of Dick Cheney, and obviously it involves a lot about the Iraq War. And you know, was it accurate, do you think, and does it really matter?
Well, I mean, to deal with whether it really matters first, I suppose, in a way, I don't think it necessarily does. I mean, I think my beef with the other piece in The Guardian, Guardian is just people fighting each other these days, and really my beef with that was just that I do think when people go and see a fictional film, they want a fictional film. It's not a documentary. They are looking for a work of fiction, which, of course, might be more about truth than fact, if you want to distinguish between those things. It's about trying to get to a kind of emotional truth, which perhaps sometimes straight history isn't, you know, that's not really what it covers. And I mean, I suppose in terms of this film, now it's got this lovely disclaimer at the beginning, without many spoilers, which sort of says, you know, this what follows is a true story. Now, that's a big claim, of course. They are claiming it's a true story. And then it says, well, it's sort of as true as it can be, given that Dick Cheney's a very secretive man. And then the words just come from the screen, we did our fucking best. And, you know, I think that's kind of a wink and nudge, because what that says is, you know, we've tried to get here, but you know, it's allowing that this is not a documentary, but it's got some flaws. And I think, you know, in terms of, there's been some very good, interesting criticism of it. And I think probably the best one was by Fred Kaplan in Slate online, where he's kind of a critic of Dick Cheney, a journalist, a historian. And he sort of made a point about the way it contextualizes Cheney doesn't really give you a sense of, you know, that kind of the important context vis-a-vis the first Gulf War. The film deals a lot with the second Gulf War, with the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, but not with the first. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, that would change Cheney's character. So, you know, Kaplan kind of argues that this competence you see originally in the first Gulf War, you know, then there's more of a progression in the second one. His sort of conversion to this kind of, you know, rather extreme position was what shocked people. And the film doesn't really give you a sense of that. It sort of presents him as sort of being fairly extreme throughout. I think that's a legitimate criticism, really, of the film. But in terms of, you know, and I think the film itself has a quite, I mean, it's a very anarchic style. It's you know, kind of playing around with fact, it gives you some counter narratives at some point. So I think it's acknowledging that there will be that different versions are possible. It's not presenting itself as a pure truth, you know.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty fair. I found sometimes the film was a little bit too pleased with its own style. So I really liked the first film, The Big Short, that was very similar in style. Had some slightly different things where they just get famous people to randomly explain things to you in the bath or whatever. And I liked this style to a point, but I felt in this film, every now and again, there was a moment where it was just too jump cutty or too, oh, look, that guy's just been run over or whatever. And it was like, it was just a little bit too pleased with itself. The term smug liberal is one that gets bandied around a bit too often, but I can see the etymology of it when I'm coming away, the most liberal lefty, you know, Bush-hating, Iraq-hating person in the world, thinking, oh, that film was a bit too much at times.
I really enjoyed watching it. And I laughed in all the right places. The first laugh being, you know, that disclaimer. But it left me slightly uneasy about it. I mean, it was an enjoyable film to watch. And if it was a film about, Richard C. Haney or somebody, it would have been no problems in my head about it. But it seemed to be a film that wanted to get beneath the surface. And he was talking about, you know, what still is a live political kind of issue, obviously, in international affairs and American politics and even our own politics. And I just thought it avoided all the interesting kind of complications, maybe about Cheney himself specifically. And we didn't really get below the surface of Cheney is the devil. Cheney is evil. He's been obsessed with power. He wants to serve the powerful by getting power himself. He wants to bring power closer and closer to himself and those who he's serving. And I just didn't really think we were given a complicated picture. We were given the picture that I guess most people who went in to see the film had of Dick Cheney. And I felt pandered to. And I never liked being pandered to. And I think you're pulling. You're not really doing a film about Dick Cheney. It's about what we think about Dick Cheney. And we already think that anyway.
Yeah, I think this is our age old thing, Steve, that you and I bring up quite often, which is whose mind was changed by going to see that film? And is anyone going to see that film who isn't already fairly certain that they have an opinion on Dick Cheney?
I think there's a factor that you get as well in this film. And funnily enough, I think I also remember feeling it a bit in Oliver Stone's film W about George W. Bush from a few years ago, I think that's about a decade old now, which starred Josh Brolin as Bush, is that it makes you feel quite sympathetic towards George W. Bush. You know, he comes across as sort of quite sweet, desperate to please his father, very lost. And the funny thing is film sort of does that. It can make, you know, people who, because I mean, I think one of the things that they're trying to do in this, I mean, I suppose when they're looking at Cheney, the film has, again, without too many spoilers, quite a lot about his family, his relationship with his wife, which I think is really interesting, and with his daughters. It feels like it's trying to get at something, and yet it doesn't quite somehow get there. I think you're right that there's a sense that, you know, we want to see below the surface of this man, this secretive, mysterious man, but it doesn't quite know what's there. It's like they haven't quite cracked that mystery. And so you're left slightly frustrated by it. And I mean, it's also great pains to make sure you don't sympathise with Cheney. But then why are you watching? Is it just a morality tale?
Yeah, because I mean, I saw W as more recently after seeing it when it first came out. And because I thought, well, I'd be interested to see how Cheney is depicted in that film. And it's exactly the same. I mean, he isn't in the film as much because it's about W, but it's exactly the same role. And it was interesting because Adam McKay, who wrote and directed it, apparently wrote for Saturday Night Live, you know, when Cheney was your actual vice president. And his depiction was, you know, it's exactly the same for Saturday Night Live sketch, but it's on a much grander scale in the film. And it hasn't really become any more nuanced. And maybe, you know, maybe there is no nuance to Dick Cheney. I don't know. But, he, you know, in public he presents this kind of bland stonewall face. You don't really know what's going on behind the real Dick Cheney. But the film, like Alex, you were saying about his relationship with his wife, who very much like George W.'s wife, kind of saves him from himself and then sets him on his path. But even more so, because she appears at various points to be more the ideologue than he is, and the harder one. And even in the big jokey bit, maybe the bit that you meant, Emma, about the film feeling a bit self-satisfied with itself, when she, Lynn Cheney, and Dick are basically quoting from Macbeth. So that makes her Lady Macbeth. I mean, was she? But it doesn't really develop that. And the film also looks at when Cheney's lesbian daughter first comes out, he puts his arm around her, and his wife is a more standoffish, let's put it that way. And throughout the film, until the very end, he refuses to talk about that. And he doesn't, and specifically, he doesn't come out and support or doesn't oppose gay marriage, does he? And that contradiction, apart from his love of family, is that what we're meant to take from that? But then towards the end, when his other daughter wants to run, and she says, "I'm getting killed here," because they all say, "I'm against, you know, I'm in favour of gay marriage because I can't talk about my opposition to it because of my sister," and that's something that you've kind of laid down the law on. And then they let her do it, and we can see the consequences of, you know, the emotional consequences. That's never explained. Mm. You know, so there are all those little things, and there's a few more things, but he's clearly, they're kind of trying to point to something, but they don't, it's not a full picture. It's still the bland face that we're getting.
I think for me, the difference between this and The Big Short is The Big Short took a very, very complicated set of ideas and simplified them and said, look, this is, we're going to take you step by step by step through how this happened and what happened and how it worked out and how these particular people were involved in it. And that was really illuminating for me. Whereas here, I think what they've done is said, we're going to take this guy who, like all human beings, is probably quite a complex character, simplify him down into his most base characteristics, and then offer you that caricature of him in a lot of clever and interesting and fun ways. Mm. And that is a different thing, I think, for me. And that's why I don't think this film worked as well as The Big Short.
I definitely prefer The Big Short as a film. I think it's more successful, isn't it? And there's an extent to which I think, you know, sort of picking up, Emma, on one of your earlier points, that in a sense they've got the problem a bit here as well. And, you know, he kind of reiterates it himself, Cheney, in the film, the character, is that he's boring, right? Everyone else, you've got these little jump cuts to all these people out clubbing. They don't really want to know about politics. You know, it's explicitly said, oh, they're not interested. They don't, yeah. So, you know, meanwhile, while you're not interested, this is what's happening. The problem is authentically achieving a sense of boredom. It works. But I think they're trying, you know, to liven that up with this incredibly flashy style and all of that. And sometimes I think that works really well, actually. And, you know, some fantastic performances, particularly Christian Bale and Sam Rockwell, I think, you know, both, you know, very, very good. There's a sense that I think it sounds like we're all feeling a bit like there's just, it's a little bit superficial because somehow they haven't grappled with the heart of it, what the story actually is. I mean, that's kind of what I felt at the end, is like, but I'm not sure what story I've been told here. You know, I mean, is the point Dick Cheney is, you know, basically a nasty piece of work, which, as you say, is pretty much what I thought going in. So I'm, you know, and there's some very, very interesting stuff in it, but I don't know what the narrative really was.
And I was very confused by the ending when Dick Cheney sort of is being interviewed after he's left office, and he turns to the audience. So is it directly addressing the audience? And everybody knows when you break the fourth wall, that's a very powerful moment. Whatever's going on, he's looking at you. And he says, I've got it, if I go on too long, you can always shut me up. But he says, the world is as you find it. You've got to deal with that reality. And there are monsters in this world. And then he goes on about, you know, 3,000 people being burnt to death in 9/11 by these monsters. And yet you object when I refuse to kiss those monsters on the cheek and say, pretty please. And so it's basically a defense of his kind of realpolitik, which is, you know, because he's shown, you know, I mean, he's obviously condoning and actually initiating all the torture methods and everything. I mean, a gross infringement of various civil liberties and whatever. But this gives his defence. It gives his defence. So what were we meant to think about that as an audience? What did you think, either of you?
Well, what it reminded me of was nothing so much as Jack Nicholson at the end of A Few Good Men. Like, you want me on that wall. It is basically the Jack Nicholson speech, but updated to add 9/11. And, you know, there have been plenty of opportunities to break that down ever since, not least by Tom Cruise in A Few Good Men. And I will admit that I probably know most of A Few Good Men off by heart because I watch it about every 6 months. But that's...
Well, it is a masterpiece.
It is a masterpiece. And I do have a total Sorkin addiction, so, you know. But, yeah, it was... That is that worldview, and that worldview exists, and it was very much the worldview of the early 2000 Bush administration up until Katrina, when they were riding fairly high. You know, they're, we act and you respond, we make reality, you follow reality. All of that stuff happened and was real and was said and was pursued. But for him to just say it like that at the end of the film gave you no opportunity to explore it or push against it or push back on it or any character within it to do any of that. So it was just kind of left hanging there as this kind of, well, that's what they think and that's why they're monsters. And I did, yeah, again, it felt wrongly placed and thus out of context.
And there's a point, I mean, I'm basically repeating Fred Kaplan's point here, but so go and read that article, it's very good. But he, you know, he says, like, it sort of ends with Cheney going, you know, and you let me do it, you elected us, you put us in this place, whatever. And it's like, well, no, you didn't. You just showed the bit earlier in the film where they basically stole the election. I mean, well, what's the general public actually supposed to do about this? I mean, and, you know, I understand that. I mean, that's the point where I say I feel like it was a morality tale in that, you know, we're being told that it's our fault that we're letting this happen or we're tolerating this. But yeah, I mean, it's not clear what you do. Although I have to say, like, definitely worth saying for the end of the little credit sequence where we go to another focus group, which, again, as somebody interested in sort of the play between historical films, history, reality, and all of, and fiction and all of that, is a very, very fun moment where they critique the film with an audience. And I like that. I mean, I would say, you know, big props to the film for having an understanding of the idea that there could be different narratives. You know, it's not pushing itself as the ultimate answer at all. And that was fun and playful. I thought that worked really well.
Oh, I completely agree. We had all started walking out of the cinema, and the cinema I went to see it in, you actually had to wait for a lift just outside the screen, and we all kind of ran back in to watch
that. I totally missed it. You're telling me something I didn't know was... Yeah, we left.
Oh, no, Steve, never leave before the credits.
Because I was so confused by the end. And just, I've got to go. Come on, let's go. And so I missed that. So listener, that is a spoiler alert that you should cherish. You should stay in after the credits.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the focus group, there was one thing that rang a big alarm bell for me, which, you know, one of those things where somebody says something and they know loads more about the thing that they're talking about than you do. So you just kind of take stuff on trust. And then they said something about the changing the words global warming to climate change, because that was to make it soft and fluffy. And I'm like, well, no. My understanding is that language evolved because everyone, every Christmas, every winter, would go, global warming. And actually, climate change is a better descriptor of what is happening. So I was really like, oh, I'm not sure that I believe that that's the case and that that was done through right-wing focus groups in that way. I thought that was a scientific consensus change that actually came from the environmentalist side. So, and that kind of made me think, oh, well, if that detail that I do know a little bit about is wrong, what that I don't know a little bit about is also wrong. And that's that. I hate it when that happens. When it was such a throwaway detail, and yet I'm now questioning everything.
There was that bit when Lynn Cheney's mother drowns, and I took that for completely, you know. And they thought her father had murdered her because she was presented as being an abused spouse. And I just believed that. I just took that. Thought, oh, I didn't know that about the Cheneys. Oh, that's interesting that he did that. Because then Cheney himself kind of just ostracizes the father, you know, because not true.
Yeah.
It's not true. No. His mother drowned. But under circumstances that were very different to that. And at no point did she ever think that her father had killed her mother, which is what in the film she is presented as thinking. So...
It's a very big allegation to make up.
But of course, you know, some certain people are dead. And I took that to be...
So were they estranged from the father?
I don't know about
because there's a bit at the funeral where Chaney says never speak to my family
again. I don't know about that detail, but she did not blame her father for killing her mother, but it was never ever, you know, investigated for various reasons. She drowned, but not under those circumstances, and nobody believed that she was murdered. And so that does make you think, hang on a minute. I thought actually that's a bit I didn't know happened, and I believed it was true.
Although, Emma, what I was going to say about what you were saying was this, you know, you said you hate it when this happens, that, you know, you see one thing and it starts to unravel. But I'm actually glad you spotted that, because you can't just accept these things as true. The good thing is at least that made you start asking questions. And I think you're quite right. I also picked up on the climate change point, actually, when I saw it. I was like, really? I don't know that's what happened with that. Because actually that's kind of a more politically correct term, if anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good though that you've got to watch these things with a very critical eye and not just imagine that you'll, you know, sit back there and imagine the filmmakers have got it all right, because they very usually haven't.
I mean, that's a very zeitgeist takes point of view. The alternative is I just sit in the cinema and relax for an hour and a half.
Yeah, but then you can go and watch something nice and fluffy if you
that's fair.
Maybe one that makes no claims about anything. I'd like to go and see it, please.
Yeah, I think the very fact I had to sort of I watched the film with doing this in mind, it kind of spoilt it for me, I think. Had I just watched it as something, as an entertainment, I really enjoyed it, and then I kept coming up against certain things, and there won't be many members of the audience that would have done that. I think they would have just taken it and just accepted it. Because I know there are some people, I mean, there are some people like Greg Jenner, the popular historian, who basically doesn't think there's no real problem with this kind of thing, that's using the past and telling stories, and it's got a kind of a passing relationship with the truth. Bearing in mind that all history is subject to revision and interpretation and all that kind of thing. But he thinks that, well, so long as it's provoking a debate and it's getting people interested in the past, that's all well and good. But people do take these things to be representations of the truth. And insofar as it really matters that we all go away thinking Dick Cheney really was the heart of darkness, he was very evil, he was only about power, and this is why the Iraq war happened, getting hold of the oil because that's where the power is and all of that. Maybe that's true. I mean, I couldn't honestly tell you. I don't know enough about American politics at that point, but that's certainly a view that many people have. You know, that, well, people will imagine that is how it was.
Yeah, but, you know, then there's a problem with people, isn't it? I mean, you need to be educated to live in this world. There's lots of sources of fake news out there that aren't just historical movies. And if you can't navigate through a world where there is fact and fiction, then you're going to be in a lot of trouble.
We are in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, we
certainly are. And I do think there's absolutely a big case. I mean, this is why I keep banging the drum saying that you just need to start, like, you know, the neglect of the humanities in education. You need to teach people critical thinking.
Oh, I'm 100% with you on that, Alex.
No, totally. I mean, you've got, because people, and having discussions like this is really important and really good, because it's very easy. I mean, I know it too. Of course, you sit there and you watch it. And if you're not an expert, you're not going to pick up on the fact that these things might not be as researched as well as that you would, you know, maybe hope, but or maybe expect. But if you, you know, this is kind of where you've really got to have your wits about you in the world generally, because my God, there's enough absolute nonsense on things that actually purport to be factual, like the news or documentaries, that you need to be able to kind of ask questions. But I do think with this, you know, it's, I mean, as I say, I think this film allows you to have a different take. You know, it does acknowledge that it's kind of not necessarily the only version of this story. So in some ways, I think it's actually kind of less damaging on a sort of propaganda level than something like, say, Anonymous, the film which tries to claim that Shakespeare didn't write his plays and it was the Earl of Oxford, and also that the Earl of Oxford had loads of bastard children with Elizabeth I. And, you know, there's films that kind of really push a line, Oliver Stone's JFK, which really pushes a very strong line about conspiracy theories and presents itself very much as a documentary. You know, those films really didactically go out to prove a point. And this one does at least allow you some sense that there could be other points of view, even if it doesn't really give those a lot of credit. So, I mean, in a sense, I suppose it's encouraging you to ask questions, really. And then it's really up to you to
There are moments when it kind of steps outside the film. I mean, that the moment when Chaney and his wife are kind of quoting Macbeth, that's there for laughs. I mean, it's making a point, but it's clear nobody literally believes that they're saying, you know, the filmmakers, this is what they did. They didn't actually do that, but it's kind of making some point. But I think it's when people always go on about universities and worthless degrees and degrees they should shut down, it's always media studies they talk about. And yeah, media studies is something that we need more than ever. Yes, obviously. Yes. But and of course, it being a comedy, I mean, it's obviously dark comedy, but there are some brilliant comic moments and characterizations. And I just fell in love with Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, I always had a soft spot.
There's a line.
No, Donald Rumsfeld. I mean, you know, he was
Rummy.
We're going to Rummy.
That's the only Twitter profile. I fell in love with Donald Rumsfeld.
And I just thought, this guy could have his own sitcom. It's played by Steve Carell. You know, this could run and run. He was obviously a horrible right-wing whatever, but he was so funny. He was really great.
I actually think they could have pushed the comedy even more. I mean, Rummy is full panto, but then a lot of it is. And actually, I've got no problem with that. I think that can be very entertaining. And we've seen it in stuff like this year, like The Favourite, where they've really just gone all out for, like, you know, tonally, we're just not going for your straight masterpiece theatre historical drama anymore. You know, we're going for mixing it up. And actually, I'm pretty down with that. I think that can be really good fun. And also, that sets a different tone. I think a lot of people who do worry about the difference between fact and fiction and kind of getting these movies right, is they worry less about movies that have an obviously comic tone. You know, very few historians object to Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
That's because it's straight fact, right?
Oh, of course, it's pretty accurate.
I bet there is some in Oxford.
Oh, God, I nearly went down the rabbit hole of quoting, and I realise if I start, I won't stop.
Exactly.
I mean, overall, I thought this is a very, very enjoyable film.
Yeah.
I did question how much of it was true after that moment when I'm like, I don't think that happened. And then that sort of scales fell from my eyes. Like, what else didn't happen? Maybe there was no war in Iraq. I don't know anymore.
What will Baudrillard take? The Gulf War didn't happen. Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting mix of here is a lot of facts thrown at you in a lot of interesting ways, and here are some caricature performances. And I hadn't realised that McKay had written for Saturday Night Live, but now you say that makes a lot of sense, because the bush was very one-dimensional. Yeah. Brilliant. Sam Rockwell doing an absolutely exceptional impression of George Bush. Mm. Not Sam Rockwell playing one of his more complex and interesting characters.
Yes. But what did we all... I mean, I know we're drawing to a close, but I just wondered what we thought about Christian Bale's Chaney. Because I know he's got an award and he's maybe he'll win the Oscar, I don't know. But I just thought... I don't know anything, you know. I mean, obviously, because of the nature of the film as well. But his performance... I didn't see anything there that wasn't just straight down the line, quite subtle impersonation of Dick Cheney. I didn't get anything beneath that. I don't know whether that's fair.
I think the Oscar goes to the makeup artist, doesn't it? I mean, Christian Bale for his own physical transformation. There's a certain amount of dedication to role. It's that Brando thing that people just go, oh my God, it's so amazing because he's put on weight. And I'm like, I put on weight all the time. No one gives me a bloody award.
The makeup's completely amazing. I mean, if you compare it to like some previous historical films, what's that? There's Hoover, where Leonardo DiCaprio plays J. Edgar Hoover and Armie Hammer plays his kind of lover slash assistant person. And the makeup is so bad that you feel like you're kind of watching Spitting Image at one point. It's got so much more sophisticated by this film. It's really immaculate. I think the problem for Christian Bale, I actually think it's a very good performance. He's a brilliant actor. The problem, I think, comes back to that the film doesn't have a deep perception of him, so he doesn't have a lot to work with, quite honestly. And I don't feel there's any lack of skill there from him to show you more to him, to as a character. I don't think there's a problem with how he does it, but I don't know what more he could have done, if I'm honest.
With the material he had.
But actually, I think you're right as well to say that actually, you know, we're picking stuff here, but you know what? It's a pretty enjoyable watch, I've got to say. Yeah. Like, I was laughing out loud at some points and I had a really good time in the cinema. So,
yeah, I absolutely would recommend it to a mate. Yeah. Just would also say take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, I might be coming across as being very negative, but I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. And I really am looking forward to the Donald Rumsfeld biopic. I really am. if only that would happen, that would be so wonderful. Thank you very much to Alex. Very pleasurable. Hopefully we'll get you back.
Absolutely.
Talk about something else.
And
lovely. Emma. So we can all say goodbye to our listener. Goodbye, listener.
Bye.
Yes. So we're going to play out with the trailer from Vice. Before we do, I am beholden to Lord Stuart Wood for the theme tune. I am obliged to note that this is a political human production, and I have to plead with you on whatever platform you're listening to this, please, please rate us. And thank you very much for listening.
What do you say? I want you to be my VP. I want you. You're my vice.
Well, George, I'm the CEO of a large company. And I have been Secretary of Defense. And I have been White House Chief of Staff. The vice presidency is a mostly symbolic job. Mm-hmm. However, if we came to a different understanding, I can handle the more mundane jobs, overseeing bureaucracy, military, energy, and foreign policy.
Yeah, right. I like that.
I got a plan. I know the direction. Lay the land.
And you have power. People will always try to take it from you, always.
Nothing can break me down. I'm the man.
Are you even more ruthless than you used to be?
Right at the guard, first in command. My testimony, when I take the stand. Who's the man?
So we're going to do this thing, or what? I mean, is this happening?
I believe we can make this work.
Goddamn.